Blog Talk Radio. 7630. Press 1 to be heard. Of course, as you know, War Council is an egalitarian conscious community panel of creatives that dialogues around current events, community issues. Our egalitarian panel of conscious community creatives take on topics, issues, problems, concerns, and talk about solutions and things of that sort. So if you're not in the know, get in the know. Get to know these amazing, incredible intellects, souls, spirits, people that you really want in your corner or be around and everything else. But more importantly, check out the topic that we have this evening, right? So we are continuing on from last week's Emotionally Unavailable. We're calling, you know, this one part two, Emotional Damage, but we're going to focus on women, right? And I have some fantastic people I need to introduce you to. If you haven't been to War Council, let this be the thing that you do when you see it. Come on through. Talk to the people. We talk to you. It's going to be great. It's fantastic. Me, my name is Mojave. They've taken and given me a bunch of nicknames. Mr. Tuesday Night, Iron Man, fictionally known amongst the Drip, Andrew Poetry Collective, that is, King Drip, leader of my merry band, and many other things, Chief Mr. Beggar of Erotic Slam, a bunch of things go on. But today, I'm just Mavi, and I'm here with the good people of War Council. Now, hold on, let me get this cough off. All right, here we go. We're going to open our first mic, which is La Perla Negra, a.k.a. Danielle.
Hey, what's happening? I'm chilling.
That's what's up. We like that. All right, so we got you in the building. All right, we got, of course, our very own station manager, Mr. Thursday Night, one half of the Get Down, affectionately known as Wolverine, Ray Meadows.
Hey, what's good, Mojave La Perla Negra? What is happening?
Hey, yeah.
All right. And I believe this is from the great state, all the way from VA, but moved to Alabama. Lisa Lips, is this you?
This is me.
Lisa.
Hey, y'all, what's up?
All right, so that's up. And then I know this person. So our Texas Titan, back in the building. Quinita Ramel White, a.k.a. Joan, are you there?
I am here. Hey, y'all, I missed y'all so much.
We missed you too. Hey, welcome back.
All right, we're going to go to our OG from the DMV, Joe, the Verbal Mind Dancer. We're going to bring him in. What's up, OG? What's going on?
Hey, good evening, Mojave, La Perla Naked, Lisa Lips, everybody else in the building. How y'all doing?
What's up, Joe, the Verbal Mind Dancer?
What's up?
It's a party. All right. Coming in on the tail end from the great state of New Jersey, brand new to the crew. But we got her in here, Zuina, a.k.a. Zuina Queen Simmons. Are you there?
I am here. Good evening, everybody. How are you doing?
That's so fine.
Hey, Queen.
Hey. Great to be here.
So we are in the building. Trying to get this background stuff going, so it works out perfectly. So there's anything else. So, good people. Now, to the cell, if you want me to unmute your mic, I know you usually don't want to do it, but I'm going to unmute your mic for a second so you can just comment and let us know what you want to do. Hold on for a second. To the cell, you there? Hello? Eva Shaw, are you there? Okay, well, we'll just put you back in the queue. I guess we'll talk back channel. All right. So good people, one and all, it's a party. Glad to have you all here. Welcome back to another Star Wars War Council with two fantastic, fantabulous, incredibly dope, intelligent, and beautiful souls. We're going to do this part two, this emotional damage, this talking about women being emotionally, you know, unavailable. And I know it could be a little touchy topic, but I think that we can handle it in grand form and things of that sort. So are we ready to get started?
Yeah.
Ready.
All right. So Joan, since you haven't been here, right, you haven't been around when we missed you so much, we're going to start with you. So How and what ways are women are emotionally unavailable, and how does it affect relationships?
It's kind of crazy that we decided to get on this side of it tonight, because I actually had a group that I'm in, a dating group that's specifically for women. And today someone came in and talked about how busy she was and how, you know, she works full time. She owns a couple of businesses. She has children, and they are, you know, they have full activity calendars, and how she's on dating apps, and, you know, she goes to the places that men go, but no one approaches her. And she said that she is all about the business, because that's, you know, her primary source of income. She's single, she's independent, or whatever have you. And so the question that was posed to her was how she looks when she enters building. And she said, well, you know, I, like when I'm grocery shopping, I'm just grocery shopping. I'm looking straight ahead. And so one of the interesting things that someone brought up was, if you're not looking for who's looking at you, you'll never see who's trying to check for you.
Absolutely.
And so I think that what happens is, after you've been rejected or a relationship fails or it doesn't turn out the way that you think it's going to turn out a certain number of times, you just kind of hunker down and, you know, go back to the books. Mm-hmm. And you go back to the basics. And you stop looking for love that's available, or it could be available to you, because you've already determined for yourself that it's probably not going to work, and you carry yourself and you close yourself off. And so not only are you mentally and emotionally unavailable, you make sure that you don't have time.
Wow. All right, so I'm going to go from you. I'm going to go to Edwina. Edwina, how is being emotionally unavailable affect women, and how does it affect their relationships?
Well, from my personal experience, I think that emotional availability can be somewhat of a survival tactic, you know? Sometimes you get into these places in your life where things aren't going the way that they're supposed to, or like a lot of times it's from past traumas or traumatic situations, and you're just kind of going through emotions in different situations, and that can, you know, appear as emotional unavailability to most people, because you're just trying to survive. You're not trying to reach out to different people. And I believe, like Joan was saying, you have to be looking for people in order to find them. And a lot of times, if you're emotionally unavailable, you're just kind of going through the motions of your own life, your own little survival patterns, and something has to kind of get you out of those. And that's been the experience for me.
Wow. Okay. All right. So I'm going to ask the same question of you, Lisa Litz.
For me, it's me being iffy about how people receive me. I've been told that I seem unapproachable. So I'm open, but then I feel like I'm looking thirsty. So I'm just kind of caught in that cycle of not wanting to be approachable, but not wanting to look, really looking for someone to approach. So I tend to just kind of watch what's going on around me a little bit and try to pay attention, but I'm not like really like checking people out. So I guess that can come emotionally unavailable.
Oh, okay. All right. So I'm going to go from you. I'm going to go to you, La Perla Negra.
All the ladies, I guess, you know, there are no wrong responses to this, no wrong replies. I'm pretty much elite. I wouldn't say elite, but I'm just like, after so many years of dealing with so much trauma and being used for the kind of heart that I have. I don't look for love. I stay open to it, but I don't look for it. I mean, if it comes to me, it comes to me. If it doesn't, it doesn't. Because it's like, I don't know what poet said it last night or who said it or the other night, but they said, I don't know loneliness because I know God, so it doesn't bother me.
Mm.
And it's like, I don't chase. I might flirt a little bit to let people know, you know, I'm the kind of person you need to let people know that you are still human, just like they are. So that playful side of me will come out often. But other than that, I'm not like out here hunting for the man that's supposed to be in my life. If he's going to be there, he's going to be there. If he's not, he's not. And some may take that with me having that nonchalant attitude about whether or not it's going to come. They may take that as standoffish in certain circumstances, or they may take it as me being emotionally unavailable, but I am not. I've never been. I've just gotten to that point now where it is what it is. Life happens. And that's pretty much it, you know. I stay open. It's just that I'm not for a bunch of bullshit anymore, and I can see it coming a mile away. I really, really can at this stage in the game, the age that I'm at. Oh, I can see the bullshit coming. So I won't pull away from people, but I'm not so quick and so easy to engage them all the time. I used to be the kind of person that would jump right in because I was trying to fit in, because my life lacked a lot of love and emotion and affection when I was little. And I wanted that. I used to try to fit in, but after a certain amount of years, it's what it is.
Oh, wow.
So that's pretty much it.
All right, so the other thing is, because I want to put that, because I see certain things and I receive some of that back channel, but I want to make sure that I talk to the fellas. So Joe and Van, have you dealt with a prospective partner that was emotionally unavailable to you?
You said a prospective partner, not a partner, but
a partner. Let's just go with a partner. Have you dealt with a partner that was emotionally unavailable?
Yeah.
In what way?
When in my situation, the person becomes emotionally unavailable because, you know, things were not going according to plan, so to speak. Things were not going, you know, the direction that she wanted it to go in, you know. Not that I was, I spoke truth to myself, you know, what I wanted and what I needed, you know, in the relationship. But, you know, she wanted more, more than I was willing to sacrifice. So, you know, she became emotionally unavailable otherwise.
Wow. You said something like sacrifice. I mean, that's the one thing I think that comes out. Like, sacrifice can go either way. Like, when people are sacrificing,
yeah,
it's good, the bad sacrifices. So, all right, so the general question we're asked dealing with that, because what came in through the back channel, which I think all of you guys have touched on, was, is it used as a coping mechanism or strategy, right? And Joan started out, wading into it automatically, saying, listen, if you're not paying attention, how are you ever going to know? And so the other thing is, it seems as if people who are mostly unavailable don't want to make sacrifices. All right. How do you find this to be true, in your opinion? And anybody can answer.
Yep.
Yeah, it's a survival mechanism. But it also it can be a selfish thing as well, not wanting to sacrifice anything. Life does people, it gets them like that. They get set in a certain mindset, and how we perceive it most of the time is selfish or not wanting to sacrifice. And, but others that are a little bit more open-minded, we see the big picture, you know. It's just life happens, and people don't start out that way, but they do tend to develop an attitude, a certain attitude towards life after a while, and it can seem a little selfish.
I was gonna say I don't know if it's I don't know. Well, some people I would say about, you know, I don't know what the percentage is, but some people it's absolutely selfishness, because they are just, some people are just born takers and they don't evolve from taking. But, you know, I'm excluding those people. I'm excluding those people from my next statement. I think sometimes it's born more out of a protective mechanism for yourself. Like sometimes we reach a breaking point with people and we feel like if one more thing happens, I'm going to snap. And you know, when you know yourself, I think, you know, you know what your breaking point is, and so in order for you to not cross the threshold into I'ma act a goddamn fool all the damn time with anybody I interact with, let a motherfucker, because I wish he would. Before we get to that, let me hold on to the common decency that my village believes they raised me with, and I will turn on my nonchalantness so that I'll be unaffected. So I think it's more not selfishness sometimes. It's about preservation, like you're trying to preserve yourself.
Right.
It's a defense mechanism.
It's a defense mechanism, because I do find myself doing that from time to time. I do get in that place where I want to be out publicly and enjoying people and meeting new people, especially in this situation where I just moved. But I'm also living with the ghosts of the things that I've been through, so I'm trying to be cautious not to run into those things again. So I tend to be a little bit standoffish. I'll try and have conversation. If I say a couple things and nobody really responds to it, then I'll just shut the hell up and stay out of it and move on with my life. But and it's not an intentional wanting to be standoffish, wanting to be emotionally available. It's just that when I open myself up and I'm not received well, or if I am received with some sort of twist to it, some little malice or some little, you know, snide remark or whatever, then I close off because I just don't want to be bothered with it. I have better things to do with my time.
That's for sure. I think the bottom line is we all have to be really selective about who we give access to our energy. And I think that most of this is a lesson in figuring that out. There might be somebody that you are connected with at a point, but then you lose the ability to properly communicate or articulate what you're feeling to them, and it's like you're no longer really communicating with them. So you go numb to that. You go numb to the idea of trying. But,
right.
You know, yeah.
Yes, because I have really about energy vampires. Yeah, I have energy vampires in my life already that I'm trying to wheedle my way away from, and I don't need another suck on my life. I need somebody who's going to feed into me as much as I feed into them.
Absolutely.
Okay. So I want to make sure I get into this whole thing. So you know, we already talked about the signs of what it is, you know, where people shy away from conversations about their emotions, avoid displays of affection. Someone might make you feel wrong for being emotional or something like that, or showing empathy during difficult time, providing emotional support or encouraging listening responses. But what I wanted to point out was, since we were talking about women on this side of particular things, here there's like 29 things, right? And this comes from lightvirtue.com. It can easily, if you want the link, ask me. I'll get it for you. But it talks about 29 serious signs and traits of emotionally unavailable women, right? So it talks about difficulty in sharing feelings, not interested in knowing the real you, not intimate, out of fear of vulnerability, defensive most of the time, avoids responsibility, never commits to a relationship, prefers her own convenience. She is narcissistic. All right, I'm going to put that in the parking lot, come back to it. Wants sex, not love, is aloof and distant, can't see the bigger picture, casual about relationships, seeks attention, acts dominantly, makes you feel guilty for no reason, acts independent, wants it all, and she wants it all now, is a perfectionist, angry all the time, does not open up with you, still loving her ex, avoids deep one-on-one conversation, has no empathy for you, seeks to control you, practices emotional blackmail, avoids meeting your friends and family, avoids introducing you to her friends and family, and keeps hurting you emotionally, and will not break up with you. Now, that's a lot. I know that's a lot. That's a lot.
That's the devil. That ain't just the devil. I don't care anybody like that, male or female. That's the devil. I don't care. No. Nope.
Well, I mean, the one thing that I think that...
I can ask a couple of those things that you were saying, but not all that other shit. That's a devil.
I have to say that most of the stuff that is mentioned, I think it could go either way. I think these set of traits happen for everyone, but since we're talking about women, I know in dealing with my ex for a lot of things, emotional blackmail, doing different things, not this, like I was going to read something, I changed my mind because it was entirely too personal. I shouldn't share that type of information, and I might get sued. But I was going to show, like, literally where the emotional blackmail was taking place, like how someone leverages their children against you. And I think, like, the one thing I also wanted to point out, because I'm going to play the clip that I put in the chat, but some women who are emotionally unavailable and narcissistic will leverage a man through their children, right? And so I know I've had this experience. I'm pretty sure Joe and I know Van has had this experience, but there's an emotional unavailable because they're so thinking about themselves and not thinking about the bigger picture of how this might affect the children, might affect them, anything else. So I want to start out with the fellas on this before I come to you ladies and say, so Van and Joe, all right, it can be deeply personal. Has the person been narcissistic or emotionally unavailable, leveraged their children, your children, against you?
Absolutely.
No for me.
Absolutely. yeah. My children's mother, I'll leave her nameless. That's pretty much where she is in my book. But we were going through what we were going through. She made a point to make sure that she used the kids to mess with me emotionally, even though she was emotionally unavailable to me. As a matter of fact, she was completely unavailable to me in every way, shape, possible form. But she just didn't really realize what she was doing because my kids all want to live with me now. And they have been wanting to live with me since it happened. So in her position to use the kids against me because of her emotional unavailability, she's actually made my kids emotionally unavailable to her. They won't even talk to her.
Wow. That's major. Joe.
Yes, sir.
So have you had your children leveraged against you by a mostly unavailable partner?
I'd say early on, I would say yeah, because, you know, bullshit arguments and, you know, it's always my fault, even though, you know, it wasn't. But as they got older, you know, they come to me and realize, damn, you know, mom's crazy. I don't know how you did it, you know, stuff like that. But, you know, at the same time, you know, like I say, you know, even though we were separating apart during our marriage, you know, we still stayed married for the sake of the kids. You know, I wanted my kids to be out of school before we decided to do, you know, anything about it, our situation, you know. Let them have a two-parent household through their school years. Then after that, you know, after the last one graduated, done deal. You know, we talk, it's time to part ways now. You know, instead of,
wow,
you know, tearing them down emotionally as well, you know, dragging them into the mix. I tried to avoid that because, you know, that does happen. You know, all of a sudden dad's gone or mom's gone or whatever. I want to avoid that. So to avoid that, you know, I just waited. But to the last one, got out of school, graduated college, actually. And after that, this is where I set the waves. They ain't got nothing to drag them down education-wise, nothing on their minds about, you know, mom and dad. They ain't got to worry about that shit. So they got enough when they play as it is, you know, dealing with the society and school and how it is now. So I decided to wait. And once we did wait, you know, hey, it was all, you know, peaches and cream. You know, we had the best time. You know, even Jill said, y'all sure y'all can't get along? You know, y'all, see, you know, hey, it's just, you know, we did the marriage thing, it was all right. Then, you know, we grew. Well, I got married young, so we grew up doing the marriage, and we grew in separate directions. And there was no point in tearing each other down about it. You had another, you know, you had one lifestyle, I had another. So when the time came, you know, hey, we parted ways, we parted on good terms. I'm a free-thinking person. I was like drama, no kind, shape, or form. I don't do it. And I avoided it at all costs. If that caused me to be emotionally available because I avoid drama, then I am emotionally unavailable for that bullshit.
All right, so let's delve back into the thing and get the ladies back involved. Have you seen? So a lot of times we do things by committee. And I know men, women, you know, we sometimes get into our groups. And we decide things based on what we all are having. Ladies, have you been in a group where you've seen one of your friends or partners or people you relate to be any of these traits? Have you seen a female narcissist, and have you seen a woman who is unavailable or selfish in any form or fashion in their relationships or towards their families?
Have I? I have. I know several women that are like that now and refuse to change, but theirs is more of a selfish thing, a greed thing, because they both married wealthy men, and that's all they married them for. It's for their wealth. There was no love there. There was barely any affection. And then the sex just got cut off. And they're still the same exact way with to them, just waiting for them to pass on so they can collect the insurance money and the pension or whatever financial benefits come from them passing. And I just look at them. I mean, karma is biting them right now. When you are like that, but I just look at them because I said all that I can say. I have a different kind of heart, so yeah.
Okay. I'm gonna go to Joan. right now. So, Joan, have you seen? I'm sorry, because you know I got to make use of you right here. I'm sorry, I got to do it.
You know, I feel like I will change the names and faces to protect the guilty. I mean, I have. I can be honest and say that I have. I don't like the word narcissist because I just feel like it's overused. It's next to toxic in my book. And sometimes we just put ourselves in positions where we allow people to live out who they are, and we are standing by. You know, mm-hmm. So everything you don't mm-hmm. disagree with, you are there for sometimes. And I have that type of personality that, you know, if you don't stop me, my intention is not necessarily to hurt you. Your hurt comes as a byproduct of my action.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so it's because I'm desiring to do me, and you just happen to become collateral damage. And so one of my exes was had a very, very laid back demeanor. And to a certain degree, I mean, he couldn't stop me, but he would also stand by and allow me to do things that other people viewed as toxic or, you know, and they felt like I didn't have a certain level of appreciation. And I can be honest and say that I didn't, but it was because of things that I allowed to fester between us. So small mm-hmm. things that turned into larger things that turned into, well, fuck it, I'm going to just do this. You know, and, you know, even when it comes to, you know, men who are wealthy and they are married to certain women and these women have never shown them affection, he got what he paid for.
What? What?
He got what he paid for. I mean, because here's the thing. Sometimes how you start things are exactly how they end. And so why would you go into something with someone who doesn't pay attention to you, who is not affectionate towards you, who is always in your pocket and, you know, never in your lap or never in your heart or wherever you feel like they should be? I mean, I don't believe that these men expect anything different. You know, so, I mean, yeah, I mean, narcissism or toxicity or emotional unavailability and selfishness, it kind of runs the gambit when you stay too long.
Hello.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's a mouthful.
And that's what it was for me. I stayed in a situation for other people way too long.
Mm-hmm.
I knew I should have been gone, and it caused me to act out. And I can't say act out of character. No, I did everything I wanted to do. But had I actually lived out my truth in the beginning, when I started to recognize, you know what, maybe this isn't acting right. But I had the pressures of societal norms and family and what women are supposed to be and who we're supposed to do and all of those things. It kind of turned me into a different version of myself. It led me to be a wild child.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know, because if you don't feel like you're going to be able to, if you can't do what you want to do at your house, when you go to your friend's house, you're going to do everything you want to do. It was terrible.
It was terrible, and I will own that.
And I've apologized for it, and you know, I believe that he and I are in a place where we've made peace with it. But, listen. I was something else.
Thank you for that, Candace. Thank you. Thank you.
Hey, anybody else like to make commentary?
Sometimes our reactions
we have to react so much to different kinds of bullshit, it develops into our actual actions and becomes a part of our personality. And that can change a lot of the way that you did things.
Well, I dig with you. I dig with what this is saying.
Yes, Lord.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Anyone else like to make a comment before you move forward?
For me, it was being with someone who was emotionally unavailable that taught me how to separate myself. When it was clear to me that I wasn't needed for him in any situation, other than publicly he would be able to say, I have a wife, and to show off for his family, but outside of that, he didn't care where I was or what I did. Eventually, I just got in that mode where I didn't care what I did outside of being at home, too, because it didn't matter anyway. You know, he was all, no matter what I did, it didn't draw him any closer to me. And so when the marriage ended, I pretty much just felt being let go of on a legal scale, because emotionally we had been apart for 2 years by the time the marriage ended.
Right. Well, they're like, it's a church up in here. It's like church. Too much honesty. But that's the part I don't think a lot of people talk about, because I'm in a situation where it's expected what, you know, Joe said, to stay for the sake of the children. But if it's absolute misery and you're just doing it for the sake of the children, it's not like the children are blind. It's not like you can completely hide. You're at most relaxed when you're at home. Everything about you shows. The ugliness of who you are shows, and is normally accepted. But they see a relationship falling apart. They see the marriage falling apart and being held together by a facade. And a lot of times, my older children got older, and they don't respect the fact that I stayed through some of the things that I stayed through. But, like, you get to a point where you kind of let that old version of you die into a man who doesn't understand why that version of you is now dead. It might look like emotional unavailability when it's all, in all actuality, I'm a new person, and the person that I'm becoming now, I'm not going to let you play with her like that. She's not going to let you make her feel small and insignificant and take away her voice and just fall into a pattern of behavior that's expected. So now it's done. So however that looks is how it might look from the outside, but yeah, you have to walk your own path. I'm glad everybody was so honest to tell me how that looks on the other side of where I am. I thank you all for your honesty, honestly.
Are you muted?
Sorry, did I throw a web blanket over?
No.
Javi,
are you muted again?
I think he's talking right now. Yeah, he's muted. Javi?
Javi, we can't hear you if you're talking.
Is
somebody
sweet?
Is he
asleep?
That
hobby?
Not again.
My hobby.
Wake
not
up,
again.
Oh, my God.
Not again.
We ain't going to let you live this down this time, brother. This ain't going nowhere. Hobby, wake up.
My hobby.
All right, man. He got a lot on his plate, y'all. He got a lot on his plate. Right now, he's emotionally unavailable.
That's understandable.
He's emotionally unavailable.
My
he's emotionally unavailable. Good job.
Oh, man.
on for a second. Your thoughts.
I know a lot of different men that have taken on that role. That is one thing I commend my husband for taking on the role of father and a child that wasn't his. But I have seen how his children's mothers have treated him when it came down to the importance of that child's stability and being parent, co-parenting. Because he wasn't with them, they felt as though it was all their control, all their say. Like he had nothing to do with that child. And one thing my husband didn't play about was children. He loved his kids. He said, I would never take that away from him. I take a lot of shit away from him. I discredit him in a lot of areas of being his father. Not one of them. I envy him.
Can't hear you.
You can't hear me?
No, you just out for a second.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Yeah, bad.
Okay. I said I took a lot of shit away from my husband, but I've never discredited him as being a father because he loved his children regardless. And he didn't feel like he was obligated to them. He just loved his children, and he wanted to do what was necessary as a father in their lives out of love. It wasn't because of them. The mother saying it cost a certain amount of money to do this and do that. It was because he just was a father to his children. He loved being a daddy, and that was his thing. That was his niche in life. Everything else, but he used to remember. Huh?
No, I was like everything else touched the shit to the wind. That's why I was laughing.
I couldn't hear what you said. You sounded muffled.
I said everything else tossed it to the wind. That's what I said. That's when I started laughing.
Yeah, because my husband was a narcissist. He put the narc in narcissism. But you know, he used to come home from visits with his children, and he'd look so defeated. And then he would tell me the shit that these women are saying to him because he wasn't with them. And I had to tell him, I said, you know, with them giving you limited time or just denying you seeing your children, I said, all that shit's going to change as these children get older because kids are not blind. And they are very resilient. They can see the truth. They see right through people. Children don't have blinders on. Okay, we choose to put up blinders as adults because we just don't feel like being bothered. But there's no lying in a child's eyes. They see the truth because that's the way God designed them. Okay, it's the innocence in them. Okay, and though it gets hurt, they see and they will choose to come to you as they get older. They'll understand what you're doing on your side. And that you are not the one that's trying to stay away from them, that's the mother doing that. And I hate it when women do shit like that to men. I really do, because there are so many children out here that don't have a father that wants to be in their lives. I'm one of them women where my son's father chose to stay away. He hasn't seen him for 15 years, and that was his choice. I never denied him, but it's a choice that he makes. So when I see these other men, these real men step up to the plate, and they take these children under their wing and into their hearts. It does something for me, you know. And
okay.
I can't stand women like that.
Well, hold on. We get other people up in here. Edwina, I think I heard your voice. What were you going to say?
I was just agreeing with what Danielle was saying. That I've seen situations like my brother, his daughter, he had a daughter with a female that tried to use her as leverage to keep him in a relationship, even though She never wanted to commit to anything that he wanted. She never wanted to do anything that he expected. I mean, right down to taking the child away from a birthday party because he didn't want to let her bring alcohol to the birthday party for a child. Like, taking the child away from him for months and years at a time and making him go to court because he didn't want to be with her. But the minute he, you know, sweetened up to her and tried to be with her for the sake of the kid, she dropped all of the court cases and everything like that. But when he wasn't doing what he expected her to do, then she went right back and started running to the court and, like, you're going to have to go through visitation. But when he started doing exactly what the court said and nothing but, because he was actually taking the role of a father, picking her up from school, taking her to school, helping her with her homework, and then he dropped her off at the end of the night or keep her for weeks at a time. But when he did only what the court expected and she saw what a sacrifice of her own time it had to be, now she's at a point where she's like, oh, no, whatever it is, you know, I understand that you're trying to be a father, and she's changed her tune. But that took some time. I've seen her do some really dramatic things in front of the child just to spite him, and I think that that is the worst possible thing a woman can do.
Well, yeah.
I want to go to the fellas on this next one. And then I'm going to come to you, Jane. So, fellas, about the video, what's your opinion?
Well, every individual is not the same, right? There were some valid points that he was making in the video, but it's all about who the people are that you're dealing with, especially when it comes to parenting. You know, it's funny, but we always joke about you got to be careful who you have a child with these days. That's a very true statement.
Right.
Because when I can go back to my mom and dad's release, my mother was adamant about having all the kids that she wanted with my dad, point blank, period. She made sure that that happened. My mother has four kids, all by my dad. And the backstory is my dad wasn't around, not because of my mom, but because of my grandmother, who manipulated him into making sure that she got what she wanted as long as he was seeing her daughter. And at some point, he grew tired of it because he didn't have the freedom that he wanted to be the father that he could be. So my position on the video is everyone is different. Everyone's scenario is different. You don't know what triggers may have happened to cause a woman to make a man not be around his kids. But I will tell you this. My bonus son will be 16 this year. Man, his mom's divorced. But I was there when she found out she was carrying him, and I'm still there. And there is no way on God's green earth that you would tell me that that child is not my son. I love him and I raise him just like the rest of my children, and I treat him no different. His biological father, his mother didn't tell him he couldn't be in his life. Matter of fact, he denied that boy. So that's not his kid. But he's a splitting image of him. Mari wouldn't even take him on the show. Ain't no way I'm doing this paternity test. I don't need to. He looks just like you.
Joe.
That's all I got, bro.
Thank you, Brady.
Yeah, there were a lot of points in the video. There was a lot of points in the video that, you know, I agree with, you know, that I've seen, you know, firsthand. different, you know, couples that I know, families that I know, and all that. I mean, you know, we have some valid points in there. But, you know, I've seen that, you know, manipulation firsthand. You know, children become weapons. Sex becomes a weapon. Finances becomes a weapon. I mean, everything is weaponized to these emotionally narcissistic manipulators, man. It's just, you know, anything to boost them, you know, they're going to do it to the detriment of whoever, as long as they, you know, as long as they think they come out ahead at the end. You know, I got a, you know, good girlfriend right now, you know, beautiful, you know. Got a nice guy, you know, man, he give it the world, but, you know, she just, you know, she messes up on him, cheats on him, and all that kind of, you know, this dude giving her the world, you know, she's just like, you know, come on, you know, it's bullshit. See, that's just how it is, man. You know, some women, you know, some people are just, you know, narcissistic, manipulators. They just don't care about nobody but themselves. And it's, you know, it's hard to raise a family, you know, with a personality then like that. But, you know, there were some valid points, you know, that, you know, the video pointed out and all that stuff. But, you know, it's just, you know, like you say, everybody's different. But I've seen it too many times for it not to be something there that needs to be you know, discussed like we're doing right now.
Okay. Joan.
Yes. Oh, Joan.
Hey.
So what's your opinion on the deal?
So I have a friend, a very, very close friend, who her son is actually my godson. And he is 12. His dad, they broke up when he was about 3 years old, and when he turned 5, his dad did not come to his birthday party. And he has been gone from his life from 5 until recently. So for 7 years, he was out of his life. And to see her go through living with someone, and he was kind of like Van in a situation where when he met her daughter was very young, and he helped her to raise that daughter until she was 10. And so, you know, they were together for an extended period of time, and then he abandoned his own son. And to watch her kind of endure that was really hard. And so when he started to come around, I had to really kind of check with myself about, you know, the type of, and I don't want to say advice, but, you know, when you're close with people and you know the story and they don't have to explain everything to you and you're kind of there walking the walk with them, you know, she confided in me and asked me to a certain degree how she should handle it. And, of course, she didn't do what I advised immediately because the thing was I said, just let him back in. And she did not want to let him back in for fear that he would hurt her son again. And so I think sometimes, like Van said, we don't know the intimate, intricate details. Even when you're in a new relationship with someone, you know, you think you know that person better than the person they were with before you. Because, of course, we all present ourselves as better versions of ourselves. And we hope to be better versions of ourselves. But it's very difficult to co-parent with someone who has let you down. It's very difficult to trust someone who lied to you about how they feel about you when it comes to another person that you ultimately feel so connected to and so responsible for. And so I feel like as much as I hate it, in some ways, I do understand how women believe that this is my child, especially when there are situations where dads are in and out, because I don't know the time that you're going to be out and stay out or the time you're going to come in and stay in. And so I think that creates a lot of confusion. And sometimes he never said, I'm sorry, because he left you. And that's really what it comes down to. You conceive a child with a person, and we both believe we're going to be together, and then I turn into a lunatic, and he feels for his life safety and not going to jail, he got to leave. And, or, you know, he turns into a lunatic or whatever. We just have to call it quits, and nobody ever apologizes, and then we decide that co-parenting is going to work until it doesn't.
Oh.
So it's just a lot.
That is a lot. as a person who had to fight for his children in a lot of different ways, one of the excuses that she used to say to my children and apologies, like, I was just doing the best that I could do for me.
And you know what that means?
Yeah, doing the best that you could do for you is not inclusive of me or the children. You were making these decisions based on whatever you thought was possible for you. And there's been just several instances, like anything else. Like, when my daughter wanted to go to school in California, she signed my name. I was like, that's fraud. Like, you literally committed fraud on a federal document.
Yeah.
You, like, and just didn't give a shit because... No. And then when I talked to her about it, she's like, oh, you're trying to stop our daughter from living her dreams. I was like, number one, there's only one of us in here who's a certified academic counselor. That's me, not you. Two, when I read the paperwork, I said, only graduates 27% of the people that attend this function, and it's a pay-for-play, right? And I had a conversation, and a woman told me to my face, she's like, are you a helicopter parent? I said, you've insulted me. I don't know who you think you're talking to. I need to speak to your supervisor who runs you. Well, my supervisor, the head of school, I said, then good, give me his number. I'm going to talk to him next. Because you have these people running around with mad women. I said, you subjected our daughter to this. And then when my daughter went out there, right, because that's what she wanted to do. I mean, she did well. She did exceedingly well. She stayed on the honors list, everything else. But she couldn't eat every day. They didn't have a cafeteria. They didn't have any of these things. And she was so caught up in not thinking about what the day-to-day would look like for my daughter. She was caught up in that. And it took my daughter getting the distance to actually see with the parents. And even still, to this day, like, she did some bum shit to my daughter. Like, basically, she's divorcing her husband, the same dude that I saw in the office of a come-up. She married this guy or whatever, right? I mean, less than shit. But you're going to leave your daughter in a house while you move out and leave her there. You're thinking about you. You're not thinking about anybody else. You're thinking about anything else. And the funny thing is, what made me laugh, which I had a ball laughing about because I thought it was hilarious, right? So I'm husband number three, right? She didn't even tell me she was married. Like, I thought she was only married one person, but she married this other dude. So the other dude, she didn't have no kids with, right? And me and this dude almost got into a fight because he's basically trying to, like, come in on my kids, and I was just like, nah. He was like, yo, we can go outside and talk. I said, no, we're not going outside and talk. These my kids. They're not yours. They ain't going nowhere with you. And she secretly took them to his house anyway for 3 days, despite me.
Wow.
And I was, like, going crazy, looking for my kids, not knowing where she went, because she thought she was applying pressure. Now, the funny thing is, for Father's Day, right, for the years that he, now, this is the same dude, threw her downstairs, beat her, did all kinds of stuff to her, would fight with her, would do her thing, body slam her, right? She wished this dude a happy Father's Day. She ain't got no kids with him. I thought that shit was the most hilarious fucking shit I ever read in my entire fucking life. And I said, oh, you crazy, crazy. I was like, oh, you crazy.
Yep.
I was like,
been there,
bro. I was like, he got kids with this other woman that he's not even with because she married some other dude. And I'm sitting there like,
wow.
I was like, this is just, it's rich. It's rich. And even though I didn't mention her name, I said, you know, my children, mothers, right? I'm not going to call you out. I don't like you like that. If I don't even talk, I ain't talking. I'm going on 3 years not talking to you, not seeing you, not talking to you. I'm happy. But literally, the madness of certain people deciding to make the decisions that they want regarding their children is only about them, only about what they thought. I remember she forbid my son. Oh, I forbid you to see your father. You know, like my son got to his school. Yeah, she did that. She's like, I forget, you know, it was like a whole thing. I forbid you to see your father, all this. Like, she literally, like, you ask my kids. Like, she lied to my kids from the ages of 10 to them being 18, right? And she told them that my family hated them, didn't want them around.
Wow.
Right? Yeah, it's super evil, right? So the thing is, right, so my son, when we was doing, and my son came to see it with me, my son literally got the benefit of being on my side of the family, dealing with it. He doesn't even really know members of the other side of his mother's family. He don't really know. Like, he got an uncle, he sees him, he's like, if that's my uncle, I don't know him. I haven't known him for anything else. Like, they have so many family in the same city that they're in, but nobody talks to each other because that's how fucked up everything is between the families, everything else. Like, you know. Like, I get generally good laughters. I'm sorry, I'm venting right now. I'm going to land my plane. I get generally good laughters when I see that their grandfather, who literally only took interest in them when he moved into our house because we had to save them because they was homeless, right? And even then, he didn't do anything with them. He just lived in the same space. But every time he could get on my son's page, and he's like, hey, grandson. You never brought him, did anything for him, took him anywhere, did anything, like, in any sense of the word. But I understand that the apple doesn't fall far from the tree. I get it, right? I get it. And for that side of the family to be upset at how my children honor, like, my father, their grandmother, you know, because they were people that were in their lives, period.
Right.
That made that whole thing, that made that happen, put that energy into them, raise them. Like, my father did the best father I've ever seen in my entire life, you know. Like, literally, like, I seen my pops, like, the stuff that I wish I had, he gave to my son, free and clear, you know. But I understand things so much more now because, you know, you don't have the benefit of wisdom of that particular parent. But I can talk to parents. I can talk to my father. I can talk to my mother. I can have these conversations. But, like, for her, in particular, she wasn't able to have that. And the funny thing that I think is hilarious now is that the majority of the people that are her friends is my family. And my family basically, well, what are you going to do? Like, she's family. We can't really get rid of her. You know, she's responsible for this person, you know. But literally, how she went about doing certain things. And it's funny because, like, she's like, when she wrote about me, like, a couple months back, she's like, yo, don't let my ex tell you a story and you the answer. And I'm sitting here like, I was like, woman, you crazy. Like, I don't even talk to you. I'm not, you know, I don't even have anything to do with you in any form or fashion. I remember I went to pick my daughter up months ago. I went to pick her up. And I told my daughter, I was like, I'm not coming on your block to pick you up. I'll either be down at the end of the corner, at the corner. You're going to have to walk to the corner. I don't want to be anywhere near. And my daughter's like, Dad, why you gotta be like that? And I said, because I like peace. And peace is the greatest thing that you can have when you don't have to deal with someone anymore. You don't have to bother with their shenanigans, their trade, things that they won't get help with because hurt people. But let me land my plane on that one. All right, anybody else? Hello?
I kind of feel like these women who this person in the video is speaking of are, they want to make that father as miserable as possible. That's their only purpose in life. They have no desire to do the right thing for their children or for themselves as far as that's concerned. They only want you to hurt the way they hurt from losing you.
Yeah.
So they use the children to manipulate and to hurt you
because they want you in pain because they feel pain themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Some fixated on a relationship, and when the relationship is over, they don't know what to do with themselves because they're so fixated on that relationship. And then when the relationship ends, their only aim is to continue to make you miserable because they are miserable without you.
Yep.
What they do?
Those women have these fantasies of who and what your relationship is going to be, and they want to have control over everything, not thinking about the fact that you are a whole grown person yourself and that you're not going to do just what it is that she wants you to do. And when you grow tired of it and walk away, then their only aim is to make you miserable because they feel like you deliberately left to make them miserable. So then they do whatever they can to destroy your life because they feel like you destroyed theirs when you left. But that's not true. That's just the way they want to see it.
Yeah, that's the way they feel. They literally, some of the women I know wake up like, what can I do to make this miserable today? They live for it. And I'm like, really? I don't get it, but... I'm being hurt, but you don't seek vengeance and keep on going and going and going. I'm telling you, karma fights hard.
Right.
Ooh.
Yeah, it's the height of misery love company. They are miserable, and they want you to sit in it with them.
Yeah, they do. They do. It's sad.
If they put half that much effort into having a happy life, it would be so
right.
much better, but
right.
they would much rather just make you miserable like they are.
Yeah, because they don't want to focus on themselves, like you said. They don't want to put it into their lives. So
they don't want to take responsibility for the fact that the situation is what it is because they were making you miserable.
Well, I mean, anybody that understands with certain things, I think, when people take the responsibility or not for certain things that are occurring. I mean, like, I agree with Van, like, it depends on your situation where everything else is going on. And then you get to see different people, you know, or do certain things. I realize I attracted that type of woman because that's how my mother was, you know. And the difference between me and my father is that my father, he just knew how to cut things off just quick. You know, my father decided, like, you know, like I think I read a poem. And literally the poem was about my father basically kidnapping us. It's not even kidnapping us, but basically taking us away from our mother because we were abused. We were being abused, like literally being abused. And I mean, like, for him, because he loved his sons, like, he drove us to the Adirondacks. We were up the Adirondacks, and I was, like, telling him, I was like, yo, like, his friend Greg was, like, a mountain man. Like, you know, he had an outhouse. We'd go down by the river to, like, get fresh water and bring it up to the crib. Like, he had an ice box. He didn't have a refrigerator, you know? Like, it's craziness, but that's what my father, when I told my father and I read the poem to him, like, he was like, how do you remember all that? I said, how would I not remember that? How would I not remember certain things? I remember, like, just the craziness of it and the fact of, you know, we'd have to go to Jar to do things because my mother wanted my father to be with her, but my father wasn't going to put up with her leveraging him, doing all the different things. And here it was, I found someone just like that. And I was trying to save my mother. So literally, internally, this is deep introspection. You get this, you go get help. But I was trying to save my mother, so I was latching myself to the person, hoping that the situation would change because I was that little boy, my inner child, was always trying to hope that things would change for my mom. So I was trying to save her. I was trying to be her personal Superman. It was never going to work. And so once I understood this about myself, even with my mother, I said hard boundaries. Like, I'm probably the only son that will go off. Like, I'll go, like my brothers, like, they argue with her, but, like, I'll go off with my mother and she'll actually be quiet. Because there were so many things that she didn't tell me, and it just made me angry. Like, one time, like, when I visited my brother and he told me all this stuff, I was so mad when I ain't talked to her for, like, a couple months. Because it's just fucking emotionally irresponsible. Some people are just emotionally irresponsible towards their children, point blank. And they're fucked up. They do fucked up things to their kids. And then their kids grow up with this fucked up notion, and they do that to somebody else. That's not how we're supposed to be doing things. If you know that you have a weakness, you work on your weakness so it becomes a strength. But that's just something that doesn't happen with everybody. Like some people that deny things, everything else. Like, I am very gifted to know a great amount of fathers in my circle that love their children beyond measure. Love them. No matter whatever shit that somebody's into. One of my fraternity brothers, right, 3 times he went to Florida. 3 times. He flew down, right, it's resources, flying down to Florida, pick up his daughter, and the mother of his child hit his child. And he couldn't do anything about it. I had another friend. Same thing happened. When he visited the child, she hit the child. Because they just wanted to punish. I want to make you suffer. I want to make you spend all your resources. I want you to despair. Because it's going to make me feel good. That's fucked up. And you're fucking your kid up in the same thing. You don't think that kid wants to see their father? You don't think that kid wants to? And the funny thing is when my fraternity brother, his daughter got old enough, she told the court, I want to live with my dad. Now the mother has to spend her money to fly up to New York to see her daughter. If she wants to see her daughter, or wait, you know, because he no longer has to pay or give her money for everything. And that was part of the problem. Like, part of the other problem was because when she decided to live, like, that was a significant portion of her income that she was getting from him. And once the child decided that, she was upset, saying, oh, this is going to... She didn't really want this child to be gone because of the money the child represented to her. I don't know how fucked up that is. I mean, am I wrong?
Not at all. Bro.
But what you were saying, too, yeah, and it, that reflects what you were saying about how you chose women who were similar to your mother, that's the legacy that's left behind when these women treat you that way. Then your children grow up with these same messed up values that you perpetuated, and then they end up making themselves miserable because they don't know any different, because all we know is what our parents teach us.
Oh. All right, Joe, you were going to say something?
No, I was just agreeing with you, brother. I mean, you know, I see, you know, parental manipulation, you know, quite a bit too, you know, using the child against the fathers and vice versa, you know.
Right.
It's just sad, man, because, you know, like you said, you know, like Danielle was saying, you know, children know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they get older, they, you know, they discern more. They see who the bad guy really is. A lot of times they just buy their time to avoid drama themselves. But they know where they want to go. Just, you know, it's a messed up situation all the way around, man. You know, all this, you know, pulling back and forth from one another, tearing each other down for what? You know, ego? I mean, what? You know? Is it really worth it all?
Go ahead.
I think one of the things you said, Mojave, about your ex is that, and I don't know, I mean, I'm sure you framed it, but she's always been emotionally unavailable. And it's not specific to you. She's really not emotionally available to anyone from, you know, what we've gathered or what I've gathered. And it's a way of life. You know, I think it was Danielle who said it. We only know what we're taught.
And if we don't grow beyond learning how to cope with certain things, it ultimately becomes who we are.
Yep.
You know, if you didn't recognize that your mother was manipulative, you probably would have always just blamed your ex-wife. You know, but certain things, especially when we go back generationally, you know, nothing happens in a swoop, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of like Joe said, it's paid forward.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it takes someone to stand as an intercessor to really stand in the gap to decide to break those things so that they won't move forward.
Can I ask y'all something real quick? You know, just some parts of my mind. You know, when you was a child, you know, how many of us or y'all, you know, had a house that we would go to all the time, you know, where the parents was cool and shit, where we would hang out at a certain parent's house. Some parents' house won't go near. You know, my house was always full with, you know, the neighborhood too. Everybody hung out my fucking house.
Oh.
You know.
Yeah, that was my house.
Tells a lot to you about the emotional surroundings that kids tend to gravitate to. A lot of kids don't want to go home; they want to go hang out somebody else's house, you know, because they see they feel the love or whatever they feel there.
Yeah.
A little off subject, but it's kind of popped in my head just listening to the conversations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's relationship based.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think about the relationship that I have with my dad. You know, my dad has other children that I don't have a relationship with, and then I have my siblings that he had with my mom, and those other children, their mothers decided for whatever reason that they did not want them to have a relationship with my dad as they were growing up. Like, for instance, one of them, she was married during the time that she got involved with my dad, and she got pregnant. And so, you know, I really can't father that kid because, you know, marriage or whatever. And then two other women were pregnant at the same time, so they both kind of decided to leave him alone for those reasons. And then this other lady got pregnant and had a kid, and that child was adopted by the man that she married shortly after getting pregnant. And so he ended up passing away when that child was 15. And when that child went to college, she reached out to my dad to help her pay for school. Immediately, I was offended. And it was because I felt like she was coming in to use him. Because when she had a different daddy, another daddy, she didn't really need you. And so now she needs money, so here she comes. But, of course, on the flip side, she felt like, well, he's never done anything for me, so he should do this. But that was a decision that three adults made. Like, my dad had to sign away his rights so that you could be adopted. And though your parents decided that was the best route for them when it came to you. You know, so all of these now relationships or lack of relationships have evolved. So there are people that, depending on the circumstances in which they come into your life, you are emotionally unavailable to them. I think it's me, Val. I think it's me. Every time I start talking, he goes to sleep.
That's a good. I mean, mean, that's definitely a good point. I mean, especially if you grow up, like I have older siblings. Well, had two of them, but let me not do that. They were raised by my maternal grandmother, you know. And the thing is that, like, what led me to question a lot of times, I was like, why couldn't we all grow up like my like, there's, like, the first two, like, me and my brother, like, we were just raised differently, but my oldest brother, they got to be very much in the same space and air of them, you know, like, and even to the point where it's like, the separation came because literally, like, my mother wasn't making the effort. And the thing that made me upset about how unavailable, like I had my mother. It's like I had my grandmother. You know what I'm saying? Like I had, you know, like I had my mother and I had my grandmother. And they didn't have their father. Their father, markedly, like, was pretty much a piece of shit, you know, where anything else. He did a lot of stuff. He abused my mother. He put my mother in a coma. He did a whole bunch of shit, right? He was just a fucked up individual, you know. And so when my brother passed and I went to go see that side of the family, like, people had messages for my mother. They're like, oh, we still consider her this. We still consider this. We still consider you. Like, and they're very much intermeshed with other parts of my family, like the Wilson side of my family. They're very much into, like, mingled between the two. So, like, they know stuff about me that I don't know because I've never seen them before. But in the sense of how my mother could have been the person to bridge the gap, could have been the person to do everything else. And so with my brother, right, he did everything in his power to get my mother's attention, right? And his whole line, his whole lineage feels some kind of way about my mother because of how her behavior towards my brother and his particular branch of family. Like, when my older brother was alive, like, even still, his children come and go with my mother, call, do all kinds of stuff, get in the car, drive from Virginia to New York, like, you know, and just to surprise her, to take her out to dinner and all this other stuff and have that effect. But my mother didn't have that same effect for my brother. And so my brother offered to build her a house. He offered her to come live with him. He offered everything that he could do to establish that relationship with my mother, even to the point that when my nephew got married, like, they, like, my two brothers were, like, they was, like, hugging my mother. I was like, yo, that's my mama too, man. Like, yo, like, y'all sitting next to her, y'all, like, you know, they were, like, just on her, like really with her. And it made me realize at that point the availability that I had in spades that literally I didn't think anything of. They were starving for it. Even as men, they were starving for her attention. They wanted the love that I would take for granted all the time. They wanted it for them. And so they spent as much time around her, surrounding her, you know, spending the time with her. My brother would come back and forth. My brother never missed a phone call with her, even in his diagnosis. He called her every Sunday without fail till he got sick. My mother could always come on a phone call from my brother. But her unavailability emotionally towards them, effing sucks. It effing sucks. Anyway, let me look at the time. All right, so we got about 13 minutes. I didn't do a station identifier. For real, don't kill me. But I want to do this before we do it. Hey, Van Meadows, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here, Mahavi. What's up, bro?
Hey, Van Meadows, can you tell us what's going on in the Epiphany Ray universe for the rest of the week?
It'll be my pleasure. Ladies and gentlemen, join Epiphany Radio tomorrow night for the Erotic Love Zone with Miss VIP and La Pearl La Negra. Thursday night is a get down with your host, J. Rob, the wise son, and yours truly, Poetic. Friday night is Iron Sharpens Irons with your host, Anonymity. Saturday night is going to be Poetic Therapy with La Pearl La Negra and Rob Poetry Morrow. Sunday night, y'all will be in the Inspiration Factory with your host, Divine Inspiration, a.k.a. Paul Sampson, and yours truly, Poetic. Monday night is King and Queen's Quarters with Queen Simmons and King Atterbury. And then next Tuesday, we'll be right here again for one of Mojave's great shows. Mojave, what's
Honey Dripper.
Got next Tuesday? Bro?
Honey Dripper.
Oh, God, Honey Drippers, and my Lord, the way they drip. Make sure you tune in. Mojave,
yeah.
Back to you.
Thank you very much. So we greatly appreciate it. That's good. All right. So what I wanted to go to the other thing. So we've been the soul and do all this good stuff. I was supposed to do, it's kind of late to do with Station Identifier. Now, I don't think that really matter. Forgive us for real. I'm trying to get this other thing up. But, So here's a question, one of my last questions I'm bringing before the panel. What is it about being with someone who's emotionally unavailable is attractive to people that you know? It's not like you know they're not going to be available, but what's attractive about being with that person? Is it a physical thing? Is it you know, something that they do, something that they're part of? What is it about being around an emotionally unavailable person that's attractive to you? Like, I pretty much said what it was, but I also knew that I was easily manipulated by, like, sex and love bombing and all the different things. Like, the love bomb for me was, like, you know, her, whatever she wanted me to close, she would just do these incredibly, like, whatever you can fantasize about, I'm going to do it. It was like a chameleon mode that you would go into. I'm going to drop into chameleon mode. What happens if I just sex his brains out, and what is he going to do? And then I'll just ply him, he'll be, you know, he'll do whatever I want him to. Have you had a person, besides that, you know, what's attractive, have you had a person love bomb you in a way that you didn't believe, like, it was a love bomb? But you was getting love bomb anyway. And I'm just throw that out there real quick.
Yep. For me,
that's delivery. Go ahead, LaPearl.
Yeah, I have. But for me, what kept me around the person that was emotionally unavailable, in my early years, anybody that would pay attention to me because I didn't get it. And that person would always come to me. I didn't have to chase after them. They would come to me, even though I would be, you know, starved of that part of the relationship that I really needed, which was that emotional availability. They still came to me, so that was enough for me. I didn't know who the hell I was like that.
Well, I'm gonna keep it 100, bro. Yeah, you know, I dealt with this emotionally unavailable female. That's because her profession was a hooker. You know, that's her job, to be emotionally unavailable. She was a hooker.
Yeah,
but
she
put that thing on me, man. You know, made me feel like I was, you know, top dog. You know, I know she was emotionally unavailable, but at you know, during my time, yeah, I felt like top of the world. But yeah, she was like,
that's exactly how it works.
They
give you something that you really, really want, and then they pull back. So that you chase after them for a while, and then they give you what you want again, and that's how they keep you strung along.
That's that dope.
I came back. Hell yeah. She wait my turn and everything.
That's that dope.
Yeah.
Took me his turn and everything. Listen, everybody has a drug of choice. Everybody has a drug of choice.
Absolutely.
For me, it was the fact that I was unavailable and they were unavailable, and it made it work. So they were available just enough. And so I think we played off of
it was like a wild roller coaster.
Mm-hmm.
And we would take each other on these highs, the highest of highs and the lowest of lows. Like we were like dolphin lovers. Like we were just together. Not a pot, not a window, really not even a lot of piss. We was just together, struggling.
Mm-hmm. Damn. Mm-hmm.
But it was fun.
You say it was fun?
It was fun. I mean, to a certain degree, I'm a thrill seeker, so it was fun.
Yeah, but that's not like really a strain on either party, because neither one of y'all were there emotionally. He was there for the party, period.
Yeah, well, you know, so for instance, there were times when I really, really needed him to be available, and he would not be available, right? And so then my response to that would be to be available immediately after that, because there was a formula, right? Be immediately available after that, and then when he really, really needed me to be available, I would ghost his ass.
Mm-hmm.
And he would see me on social media with somebody else. And so then he would lose it a little bit, but he wouldn't lose it enough to make me afraid. He would lose it enough, just enough to piss me off, and then we back in this thing one more time.
y'all like playing that game. That's what it was. It was a cat and mouse game. It was a catch and release on both parts, and he didn't get in your way, you didn't get in his way, but y'all like that pursuit, you like that. It's like an adrenaline rush almost.
Right. They just kept dancing through the flames.
Listen, life is not tried. It's merely survived if you're standing outside the fire. Yes, I'll jump right in.
That's real in the field. That's real.
A little 30
yeah.
burning.
But I know the feeling. Because now I would go through honeymoon periods. I didn't really recognize the fact that I was being emotionally abused because of the honeymoon periods. Because I was like that with my parents. My parents would have honeymoon periods.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one of the jokes I always felt like if I'm playing music in a room or something, I would like, yeah, if your parents is playing this music, don't go bother them. Because that's how it was my parents. Parents, hey, you know, you hear Fabric Mind by OJs. They doing something.
I don't even know. Yeah, man. I seen pictures of your parents. Now you done ruined it in my mind with Forever Mine. I don't want to see your parents in my.
You don't even understand. My son was getting on me, right? Because I have terrible fucking friends that tell my son stories about my undergrad experience, and so my son just nevertheless he's like, you and grandpa are nasty. You and grandpa are nasty. You are nasty individuals. And I'm sitting here like I'm like, so what do you think you're destined to be, son? He's like, not you. But literally, you know, the honeymoon periods of certain things, you know, when you sit back up in this thing, like, I know exactly what that looks like, because you're like, yo, I'm in this honeymoon period, you know, I'm going from a person not standing me, then tell me that they want to make up. Like, I really wanted to read this thing to you just to show you the type of psychosis that this person was under, and they were subjecting me, and I was going for it. Like, I was, like, going for it, like, each and every time. Be like, oh, okay. You gonna come to my job, pick me up in a trench coat, take me home on my, I had, like, two-hour blocks or something. You're gonna take me home, do terrible things to me, and then come back and literally, like, ask me. One of the worst things that ever happened was we had, what was it? We had a Chevrolet Sebring. It was a Sebring, right? It was a sedan, Sebring, right? So I paid for it. Like, I paid for it, but it was in her name, right? But it was like, we're married, so what? You know, like, so what? So when she decided that she didn't want to be married anymore, she's like, give me the car back. She's like, it's my car. It's in my name. I make the payments, blah, 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 right? You know, and she had bought herself an Audi A8, and she had the car. So literally, the dude, the young dude that she was seeing, right, who didn't have a license, who was driving around selling packs out of her car, and she was a KSAC, right? That's how bad it was, right? He messed up the power steering and all kinds of stuff, and she called me after a month, and she said, about, you messed up the car. You need to pay for it. I said, I'm not paying for no car that I ain't driving. I was like, I'm not paying for nothing. Like, she really tried to put that over on me. And I was just like, no, I'm not paying for anything else. Like, you're crazy. But she really believed, like, she's going to make me pay for this dude. And it was funny, when she moved into this other apartment, the nuttiest thing about all of this thing is that I'm married to you. We have children, right? She wouldn't give me a key to the apartment, but she gave that kid a key to the apartment. And I didn't know what was going on. Yeah, so I didn't know what was going on. So one time I came to visit my kids, and he came over. So I'm thinking, like, he's like a friend of the family. Like, you know, go visit the kid because anything else. But no, he was going over there to, you know, do some plug tuning, as we were saying, De La Soul. He was coming to do some plug tuning, and I didn't know. But that being said, I was going through these things, and I was like Joe would say, I was back up in that thing. Crazy. But that's neither here nor there. But since we're here at the 11 o'clock hour, I want to give everybody's final thoughts. So, and we're going to close it out. So, start at the top. Danielle, final thoughts.
Sheesh. This is a touchy subject for me because it made me realize some things. It also just helped me talk about a little bit of stuff that I really didn't want to mention. I enjoy being here as always. Thank you. Thank you, everybody. That's it.
All right. Van, your final thoughts.
I'm always delighted to be here on the show and talk about these kinds of topics and hear everyone's perspectives and learn some things about myself, about everyone else. I guess the one thing that I will add in closing is be careful who you deal with. I know emotional unavailability is real, you know, and one day if you're not with someone, you hope to be with somebody, just make sure you're not the one that's emotionally unavailable.
Wow. All right, Lisa Lips, your final thoughts.
For me, the War Council has become like the centerpiece of everything. You guys are so amazingly dope. I love being a part of this and hearing all the perspectives. It has changed my perspective on dating and being a single woman in this world. There's some dope brothers in here that have perspectives that I don't hear from the average man on the street. And it makes me raise my bar because there are men like you on earth. And so for that, I'm appreciative. And as far as the topic is concerned, it opened my eyes to some of the things that I do that can seem to be unavailable, make me unavailable. And so the War Council is growing. And I appreciate that.
Wow. Okay, so I go from that, from you, we go to Joe the Verbal Mind Dancer. Final thoughts.
Well, my final thoughts is, man, it was a great topic, but, you know, you know, now that we discuss emotional unavailability, just don't stop here. You know, delve further into it. Now, like you say, you know, kind of understand yourself. I mean, you know, like I say, you know, a lot of these things didn't come to light until we have the discussion. You know, I've looked up a few things, like, so, okay, you know, checking off this, checking off that. You know, understand yourself and understand, you know, the subject matter. Study it more. Just don't stop here. You know, look further into emotional availability. Think back in your past and apply it, you know, then apply it to your future, how you want to be. So, you know, it was a great topic. You know, I enjoyed it. So, you know, those are my final thoughts. Just don't leave it here. Delve further into it as you progress through life.
So, let's go to Adria. Final thoughts.
My final thoughts. I feel like the work in all of this is to heal. I think we all can stand to do a lot of healing, and conversations like the one that we had tonight, I agree with everyone. War Council really brings those types of conversations to the forefront in an open discussion that feels safe, where you can come about, you know, from different perspectives, even unpopular ones. I really do appreciate that, and you know, we all have to, you have to protect your energy. You got to protect your space. And however that looks from the outside, you can't really say, but healing and reflecting on what role you play in these situations that you find yourself in is really important. So I'm loving these conversations.
Joan, final thoughts.
I just missed you guys so much. I'm really I work a lot, and I'm not. I realize that, you know, I need a more creative outlet, and so for me that is where I hold you guys. You know, like Edwina said, this is a safe space, and I appreciate that because I know sometimes I'm off the wall with it, and I only feel judged, you know, a very little bit, and I'm okay with that because, you know, as much as we hate judgment, we also need it to keep us safe and within, you know, good parameters and boundaries of life. So I'm okay with that. As far as the topic is concerned, I think it's really touchy because we all come from we're all made up of so many experiences. And different interactions bring out different reactions from us. And so the only thing I would say is that as we move towards healing, also have a little grace with yourself and also, you know, with the people you encounter, because they may not be a great romantic partner for you at this time, but you never know how much grace has been taken from them. So if you can afford to lend them a little bit, I would encourage everybody to do so.
Makes sense. Makes sense. Just making sure I didn't miss anybody. So with everything else, T. LaChelle, I know you're on. Did you want to say anything? Oh, well, no answer. All right, well, ladies and gentlemen, good people, one and all, thank you for coming out to this installment of War Council here of the V Radio Universe of a Real Entertainment Network, sponsored by Raw Links. Why be average when you can be raw? Check out the Facebook page. Make sure you get over there. Get your Raw Links, because soon I've got to come and get mine. That being said, I would like to thank my fantastic panel for coming through and rocking with us. Jodo Robomondez here, Serena Simmons, of course, Cornita Ramel White, a.k.a. Joan, we missed you too. Lisa Lips, Ben Meadows, and my favorite Philly John, Danielle, Cheney, can y'all give yourselves a round of applause? All right, and amazing people, amazing people. And shout out to Tiva Shell for the event page and talking about different things. We appreciate you for holding us down. So for that, this podcast will self-destruct in 10, 9, 8, 7. Oh, yeah, don't forget, we're going to be in Philly. We're going to be in Philly July 7th through the 10th. I'll be there. It's going to be like a mini Epiphany reunion. Make sure you check us out. We're going to be over there.
Absolutely.
Poetry, doing poetry. While we're not, we'll be at the happy hour. We'll be all the black people at the happy hour getting drunk. That'll be us. that'll be us. And then on top of that, today I discovered that actually the room they gave me is not the room that I thought it was. It's a bigger room. So shenanigans, Shell and Sue, make sure you come through. We have a photo booth, so if you take pictures, if you don't pay for the package, you're going to have to pay a certain amount of money to use the photo booth. I'll put that in the thing. Everything else is going on. We're wilding out. We're going to have a good time. Make sure you check us out. Looking forward to seeing my Epiphany Radio family in real time, along with the Drip, along with the Rock of Slam, the ES Fam, the Tribe. It's going to be a little crazy. It's going to be a little crazy. So if you're around, come check us out. If you're interested, let me know. We'll see what we can do, and we'll holler at that. But this podcast will self-destruct in 10, 9, 8,
good night, everybody.
7, 6.
Love you guys.
5.
Much love, y'all.
Blessings.
3, 2, 1.